Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we're learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves at the very bottom on the last line of Daf Chaf Hei Amud Aleph, that's 25A, right in the middle of that last line. This series of recordings is a joint project of OU Torah, the OU Department of Synagogue Services, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. What we've been discussing is the burial practices of Amoraim. In particular, we've been telling a long story about the burial of Rav Huna, who was a second-generation Amora and was the head of the yeshiva in Sura. And we told a lot of stories about his what happened when he died and how they have now taken him, how they took him to the land of Israel and where they buried him there next to Rabbi Chiya. And now we come to the story of the son of Rav Huna, Rabba Bar Huna, and what happened when he passed away, and he was also taken to Israel to be buried, but he was taken along with his colleague Rav Hamnuna, and that's where we start at the bottom line. Kinach nafshei de Rabba Bar Huna v'Rav Hamnuna. When Rabba Bar Rav Huna and Rav Hamnuna passed away, askinu lahatam, when they arrived to there, which means they brought them from Babylonia to the land of Israel. So hatam is the land of Israel. We flip the page to Chaf Hei Amud Bet 25b. Kimatu agishra, they arrived at a certain bridge, kamu gamle, and the camels pulled up. So apparently the bridge went over something that they needed the bridge to cross over, and the bridge was very narrow, so that the two camels could not go together. One camel had to go first. Amar lahu hahutaya. There was a certain Arab merchant there who was part of the caravan, and he said, "My hi, what's going on? Why did the camels pull up?" Amrule, they said to him, "Rabbanan, it's these rabbis, the rabbis who have died. Deka avde yikra hadade." Even in death, they are still showing honor one to the other. Mar Amar, one is saying to the other one, Mar Neil Beresha, let the master go up first. Umar Amar, Mar Neil Beresha, and the other one is saying, let the other master go up first. So as if the camels understood the intentions of the dead rabbis that they were carrying, that neither rabbi wanted to go first to say that he was more important than the other rabbi, but wanted to show kavod to his colleague. So the Arab merchant said, Amar, he said, Dina hu de Rabba Bar Huna leil Beresha. He goes, it would seem to me to be proper, or the proper conclusion would be, that Rabba Bar Huna should go up first. Some people change the girsa from Dina to Bedina Didi, which would be, in my estimation, Rabba Bar Huna should go up first. And the question is why, and there's a similar sugya in Menachot that deals with this, and it seems like his reasoning was that since Rabba was not only a great Torah scholar, but also the son of Rav Huna, who was a great Torah scholar, that his pedigree had an additional component to it that Rav Hamnuna didn't have. Even though Rav Hamnuna was a great scholar, he did not come from a distinguished line. So after he said this, Khalif Gamli de Rabba Bar Huna, the camel of Rabba Bar Huna went first. In other words, they listened to his opinion. However, Natur Kache Vishine Dahutaya, that Arab suffered that all his teeth fell out. Kache are his molars, and Shine are his other teeth, that they fell out because he insulted Rav Hamnuna by saying that Rabba Bar Rav Huna was greater than him, and that wasn't his place to do so. Or perhaps, and maybe more sensibly, that he inserted himself into a machloket in which it was none of his business to decide who should go first. He should have been quiet. And the idea of his teeth falling out is a sign that that it would have been better for him to have not opened his mouth. And now that he has no teeth, he won't open his mouth either. Okay, so when they arrive at the burial place, which is Tveria, so they had hired or they had arranged for someone to be a eulogizer. They had these professional saftanim. So patach ale hahu yanuka, this certain young Yanuka means a baby, but some young, professional eulogizer. He got up and he said, gave the following eulogy, which is included in full here in the Gemara. So there must be something special or remarkable about it. Otherwise, I don't know why the Gemara would tell it to us. But it's a little hard to understand. The first phrase of the eulogy says, Geza Yeshishim Ala Mibavel, which means something along the line of the branch of an ancient line. Geza means a branch or a stump. Yeshish is related to an antiquity, an old line. So the branch of an old line has come up from Bavel. So it's possible that this is referring to Rabba Bar Rav Huna, because he had a distinguished lineage. So they're saying he comes from a long line of rabbis and he's come up from Bavel. And if that's true, then the next line where it says, V'imo Sefer Milchamot, and with him comes the Book of Wars, which would be referring then to Rav Hamnuna, because he and Rav Hamnuna were people who fought with each other in the Beit Midrash, disagreed with each other in the Beit Midrash, or because Rav Hamnuna himself was a fiery, difficult personality who fought the wars of Torah. Another way of looking at it, though, is that the whole phrase, Geza Yeshishim, also refers to Rav Hamnuna, and it's not 100% clear what it means. Rashi brings a couple of interpretations. He says Sefer Milchamot could mean the Torah, which would either mean all the Torah that the men learned in their lives, or, as we discussed earlier, it was sometimes a practice to put a Torah on the funeral bier of sages because they were learned, and so they put the Torah with them as a Kavod HaTorah. So it could be that the Sefer Milchamot refers to a Torah that was on Rav Hamnuna's bier. Okay, the next phrase it says Ka'at v'kipod huchpelu lirot b'shod v'shever haba mishinar. Now, Ka'at v'kipod are words that are mentioned in the Torah, and they're also mentioned, as Rashi quotes here, in Yishayahu Perek Lamed Dalet Pasuk Yud Aleph. But it's not 100% clear what they mean. So most people translate the Ka'at as the pelican, although in the JPS they translate it as a jackdaw. And a kipod, which in modern Hebrew is a porcupine, is usually translated as some species of owl, because in the pasuk in Yeshayahu, the next phrase is yanshuf ve'orev, the owl and the raven. So it could be that the kipod is one kind of owl and the yanshuf is another kind of owl. But they do both seem to be birds. And the context of these birds is that in Yeshayahu chapter 34, it's talking about a day of vengeance for Hashem, and he's going to destroy people and lands. And after the destruction, these animals are going to come and live there. So they are witnesses to the destruction. So that's why he references them now here. The Ka'at and the Kipod have come together to see the destruction of Torah by the death of these two great sages. So they're lirot b'shod v'shever, they're seeing the plunder and destruction. Here, you're not specifically referring to war or catastrophe, but just to the death of these two sages. And this death and destruction has come from Shinar, which is another word for Bavel. It's the name that's given to the land where they built the Migdal and city of Bavel. Then he continues on in his eulogy. Katzaf al olamo, Hashem has gotten angry at his world. V'chamas mimenu nefashot, and he has kidnapped from it souls. He's taken, because of his anger at us, he's taken away these two great souls. However, then he flips the script and says, V'samach bahem kekala chadasha, but Hashem celebrates having these two souls back with him like a new bride. In other words, it's sad for the world that he's left, but Hashem is happy to have them return to him. Rochev Aravot, Hashem, who is the one who rides on high in the heavens, Sas, he is celebrating. V'sameach bevoe lev nefesh naki v'tzadik, and he is happy when a soul of the pure and righteous come to him. So that was his eulogy for Rav Hamnuna and for Rabba Bar Rav Huna. Okay, we continue on to the next eulogy. Kinach nach shed Ravina. When Ravina passed away, Ravina was the last generation of Amoraim, and Ravina and Ravashi were the primary editors of the Talmud Bavli. Patach aleha husavdana, a certain eulogizer began his eulogy as follows. Tamarim hiniu rosh, let the palm trees shake their heads in sadness. So the idea here is that there would be a rustling sound, or they would move back and forth as a sign of sadness over the death of these two. Al tzadika tamar, for a tzadik who was like a palm, like a date tree. That's as we have the pasuk, tzadika tamar yifrach, right? That the righteous are compared to palm trees. Then he says, Nashim leilot kayamim, let the women make their days like make their nights like their days in weeping. For one, al mesim leilot kayamim, for a scholar who made his nights like his days. In other words, he studied Torah both in the days and the nights. Continuing on the next story, Amar le Ravashi. Ravashi was contemporary with Ravina. So Ravashi said to Bar Kipuk, who was one of the eulogizers, Hahu yoma mai amart, when the day comes, what will you say? Some Rishonim understand him as to be asking this before Ravina passed away, that he was asking, how will you eulogize Ravina? And some believe that he was asking, how will you eulogize me? Like, what will you say at my eulogy? Which is, I think, a pretty tough question to ask someone. So Amar le, Bar Kipuk said back to Ravashi, Amina, I will say, if among the cedar trees, which are the most mighty of trees, a blaze fault breaks out, there's a forest fire and it burns down the trees, what should the hyssops, the weeds that grow in the cracks in the wall, do? In other words, you are like a giant tree, and the rest of us, after when you pass away, the rest of the Torah scholars will be as if they are little weeds in the cracks of the sidewalk. Livyatan bechakaho Allah, if Leviathan, the greatest fish in the world, is lifted up by a net or by hooks. Some people translate chaka as hooks and some as a net. He's lifted out, he's captured out of the sea by a net. Mayasu dege rekek benacha, what will the tiny little fish that swim in a little pool of water do? In other words, he's comparing him to Leviathan, that he was so great, and the rest of the scholars as little fishies. Shotef nafla chaka, if a shotef is a raging river, a wide, broad, strong river, if a drought falls in it so that it becomes empty, here chaka means that it's dry and parched. So if even a mighty river can turn into an empty riverbed, ma yasu megevim, what's going to happen to the little puddles? Again, comparing him to the large river and all the other scholars to little puddles. Amar le Bar Avin, so that was his eulogy. Bar Avin said to Bar Kipuk, Chas v'sholom, he did not like his eulogy at all. He said, Chas v'sholom, dechaka v'shal hevet b'tzadike amina, that you should use the language of hooks and nets and fires. Like, what you're saying, that when someone died, you're saying that when Ravashi or Ravina died, that it's as if they were incinerated or as if they were captured by a fisherman. Like, that's not a respectful way to talk about the death of a righteous person. Umay Amart, so he said to him, what would you say? Amina, he says, I would say as follows. Bechula Avelim, cry for the mourners, velola aveda, and not for the lost soul. Shehi limnucha, because the soul is going to be going to the eternal rest. Va'anu la'anacha, while we are the ones who will sigh and groan in sorrow, meaning it's a terrible loss for us, but the soul is going on to a better place. So it turns out that Rav Ashi did not like either one of these eulogies. He was quite upset about them. Chalash daite, he lost his mind, Alayhu, on them. He got very angry and or depressed. And as a result of his anger, which is a theme that we see in the Gemara sometimes, that if sages get angry, sometimes bad consequences ensue. Both of these saftanim, both of these eulogizers, had a problem that their legs became stunted, their feet became twisted. Hahuyoma, that day when Ravina passed away, or Ravashi, depending on how you read the story, lo atul aspude, neither one of them came to deliver the hesped. Obviously, their proposals had been rejected. Vahainu amar Ravashi, and this is what Ravashi said, lo bar kipuk chalitz v'lo bar avin chalitz. We have a tradition that Bar Ashi said about both of these guys, that neither one of them could do chalitza. In order to do chalitza, it requires a person to have a non-twisted foot. So he said, because they both have twisted feet, they cannot do chalitza. This is a very strange story, and it also seems really terrible that Rav Ashi put these two eulogizers on the spot asked them to deliver a eulogy, and then because he didn't like it, he punished them very terribly, so that they, you know, were embarrassed and disfigured. So how do we understand this? I don't know if I really fully understand the story, but there is one possibility here that I'll suggest, which is that, and this is in the Marsha, but he says that that these were very, very final, that the idea, both eulogies, Rashi mentions that what he was upset about was that they he compared them to a shalhevet and to an aveda, to being burned in a fire and to being lost. He felt it was disrespectful to Rav Ashi or to Ravina, depending on how you read it, to be compared to having been burned by a fire or to being an aveda, a lost soul. So the Marsha sort of suggests that both of these are very final. They are viewing death as if it's something that is all over for us. When we lost these people, it's as if the tree was burned to a crisp and it's gone. And it's as if the soul is lost and there's nothing. And Rav Ashi felt that Talmid Chachamim have a presence in the world even after they leave it. It's not that it's all over. Their teachings remain, their students and their children remain, and that when thinking about death, you should not only think about the finality of it, but that even after a person passes away, their presence remains in the world. And that's why the end of the story relates to Chalitza, which is about the topic of a person whose brother passed away, and he and his wife had no children. It becomes the responsibility of the brother to help his, we don't do this anymore, but to help his, to have children with his brother's widow so that his brother's line will continue into the future, so that the death is not a final death. And so the punishment for these guys was that they could not do chalitza. They were not allowed to refuse the yibum and say, I'm not going to help my brother, continue his line. He wanted to force them into a situation where Yibum, so to speak, was their only option, to impress upon them the idea that death is not 100% final and that it's important to think about how one generation continues to have an impact on the next generation. That's a suggestion for how we might understand what's happening in this story. We'll stop there, six lines down in the wide lines, and we'll continue in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.